Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
The index funds have reshuffled the deck, and it looks to be all aces for commodities. Is it just a poker face, or are all the prices headed higher yet? We'll ask that question and many more today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists today are Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, and Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Let's open today's discussion with this question. Corn and soybeans this week pushed to new contract highs, and next week USDA will release its final projections for the 2007 harvest season. Will it, as it has been the case over the past several years, serve up a bullish surprise in the January numbers? Paul Cooley.
Well, there's a lot of think tank people that feel that they will, Todd, and they base it on the smaller crop in the last USDA production numbers. My take on the soybean or the corn side is that the corn in the Delta in the Southeast yielded better than people expected. Also, the crop was harvested early, and there possibly wasn't as much corn used for silage. However, the bull is saying that the crop is smaller, feed usage is better, and we're going to go off to the races. My hunch is that we do have some pretty expensive commodities on our hands, and corn, soybeans, and wheat, and it's expensive to ship it out of the country. But there is this two-sided equation.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
Well, I'd have to agree with everything Paul said and like to add in that I think that our exports were very heavily front-loaded, and I think we're going to have a hard time carrying on with those, especially at these higher prices and the higher fuel prices, which are going to make higher freight prices. So I think that we could see a setback in that, but that might not be considered greatly in this report we're going to get next week, Todd. And also, we've used a lot of feed. We've had a lot of livestock. But how much of it was DDGs and how much was actual corn?
And Chuck Shelby, a bullish surprise for January?
I don't know if it's a bullish surprise, but I would look at it, even if they don't change it or reduce it, even if it's slightly bigger, Todd, that doesn't mean anything. It's just like a few grains of sand in a big hourglass. So I don't know that in the long run it's really going to change anything if it's not smaller.
Wayne, let's go back to something that you just suggested and talked a little bit about, which were the export markets. This week, export market numbers for both corn and soybeans were very disappointing. Does that, as Paul Cooley mentioned earlier, mean that we've gotten to some prices, especially for soybeans, that might be shrinking the demand, the taste overseas for U.S. soybeans? Or is it just Christmas and the holiday season?
Well, it could be either one, Todd, but we'd like to think because of what also went along with it was the basis decreases greatly over the last 2 days, or widening of the basis in South America for the cash product. We're thinking some of this enthusiasm is more fund-driven and not financially by the actual end user, and some of these prices are being made or pushed and made by the larger traders, the larger funds, the excitement, the investment money that's pouring in here at the first of the year. So we're thinking that once again the old wide basis is going to come into effect because the real end user isn't willing to pay as much as some of the speculators are.
January soybeans in Chicago this week, speaking of the enthusiasm, $12.69 and a quarter, the high. The low at $11.97, gained 41 and a quarter cents to finish the January's at $12.49 a bushel. November's at $11.60 and three quarters, up 40 and a quarter, setting new contract highs in the bean pit this week. Are there more contract highs yet to come, you think, in the near future, Chuck?
Gosh, isn't it amazing, Todd? We're living history. And, you know, it's almost, you know, we just kind of pass by it pretty quickly. But, yeah, I think down the road, I think you got to respect these index funds and the amount of money they still have to come to us. And I think the idea of inflation and when people look at the price where we went to and where crude oil is and where gold is, certainly leaves room in the soybean market for some upside potential.
And more upside potential from your mind. And you might want to talk about that $100 crude we hit this week, too.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing. Three things here. Kramer on CNBC, a stock picker, is very bullish on agricultural commodities and agriculture in general. And, of course, Soundbites and Monsanto, John Deere, and all the big companies in agriculture. Then also the same Wall Street people down the road say, you know, crude oil is probably pretty toppy here, and we are going into a at least a kind of recession-type mode here in the United States. And ultimately, if we don't buy the products from China and the Pacific Rim, the world economies will slow down in time. The Federal Reserve is caught here between a federal, you know, interest rate cuts and weakening the dollar. My general impression is, you know, the second the idea that soybeans are very strong, but we do get indications that there's going to be more soybeans planted in the U.S. than some of our think tank people are saying. The reason I'm picking this up is that the fertilizer, the farmers didn't get the fertilizer bought. They're going to scramble and go to soybeans. Soybean seed sales are tremendous in the Midwest that we're indicating. And it wouldn't surprise me that if we won't push those new crop soybean acres above the 75.5 million acres. And also, I think we've also awakened the sleeping giant in South America, Brazil. We'll see a lot of acres sometime in that next year production timeframe.
Does this mean you're a willing seller of new crop and a holder of old crop as we go?
We're just showing some seismographic readings of some earthquake activity and some potential changes. It's always, in my opinion, to be better to arrive at the party late than early.
But we won't know the answer to that till the USDA report, which is a long ways away. So, again, we saw, you know, guesses all winter last year. The same thing is going to go on this year. But, you know, I agree with Paul. I think the acres of beans are going up. But it's long time to March 31st or 30th report.
Yeah, to the end. So the report you're talking about, of course, the acreage report, not the final numbers, which we get next Friday from USDA. A couple of different reports to talk about. Mark, how do you see the market then for yourself as you look out over the next 3 months, Wayne? What do you think farmers should be doing, thinking about at this point in both old crop and new crop soybeans?
Well, Todd, I think that probably the majority of farmers are oversold for what they'd like to be at this point in time, because if you sold bushel one, you've been wrong as compared to today. but we've taken some good profit. We sold at profitable levels, most of the farmers have, and that's a good thing. And I think that history tells us that generally when we get up to these very high levels, we don't stay there very long. So there needs to be some selling at these tremendously good margins, and probably paying for some way too expensive puts that maybe will seem cheap down the road. We know that all the puts we bought so far have turned out to be wrong, because we could have bought higher priced ones as we get here. But isn't it nice that we only spent so much on a put and maybe lost 20 cents in a put and have gained $1.30 in the cash market? And I think that these are things we have to look at and use, Todd. We're not sure how high this thing can go. And if we tried to sit here and tell you we knew, you'd know that we weren't telling you the truth, because we're as unsure as anybody. These index funds have more power than we thought they did. We thought beans would have stopped back a dollar before this. And our goal, or we thought their goal, was $13 and $5 in the corn. And it seems like, you know, we hit $13.01 and beans there in the overnight and on Thursday night. And it looks like there's more strength the way they closed after the attempted sell-off.
So it's good to be wrong if you're at a high price, kind of like it's good to be king, I suppose, isn't it? Do you think prices, how much upside or downside potential is in the marketplace, given the ability of the index funds to move money quickly and in large amounts?
Well, I think that this is a new era, and of course, unfortunately, it's going to create a lot of interest in the hedging community from the country elevator and the cash grain movement, and the country grain area is going to basically widen basis to determine the demand and nearby needs or improve basis levels, and so this is going to be a new science and a new industry undertaking, because you're going to find certain markets that are be willing to pay for those additional commodities versus other markets that are going to be basically out of the marketplace. So we're going to see more of a bid and ask in the marketplace than we've ever seen before. To answer your question, I think it's caught everybody's attention, and it's going to be several years before we see any major price decrease in the marketplace that we would call maybe $2 in corn or maybe $5 in soybeans. I think that's what we're saying.
On soybeans, where does demand come from when you have $11 or $12 beans or $13 soybeans?
Well, of course, the easy answer is, of course, soybean oil and soybean meal. And, of course, we do see the usage side of the equation. Both are very expensive commodities. And, we don't see any indications right now that livestock being liquidated or industrial areas being closed down. And also with the soybeans, we do have other substitutes called lysine and corn gluten feed that also affect soybean prices.
Let's turn our attention to the corn market. March corn this week, 469.5 the high, the low at $4.47.75. The settlement price up 14.75 at 466.75 for the March. December contract at 486.75, up 13.75. I don't suppose that there's any way you can't say that a 13 or 14 cent gain in the corn market when you're pushed into the 486 area isn't impressive. I mean, it's not a huge move given how high the price is, but still it's just an impressive move at this time of the season. And when you're looking at these kind of high prices, that looks like an awfully good move to the upside to me.
The fundamentals still back it up. And when you look at beans setting their all-time highs and you look where wheat's been, corn's still, we're not at 550 yet, so there's some room there. And I think the fund reallocation seems to be headed towards the corn. For whatever reason, they seem to be picking to buy the corn. So I look at corn as not at the all-time high. There's still room there to move it up into that 550 or 540 if we look at what beans and wheat have done.
Have you studied the ethanol market and the ability to use corn, how much construction might be left in the ethanol industry over the next year and a half to 2 years? What do you see?
There's some of these plants that are struggling and having some problems, but I also read an article today that said that as ethanol moves up and crude stays up here, that we can pay $6 for the corn and still make it work. So I think the concern would be that these ethanol plants are like any business. You know, they got to have good managers. They've got to have good hedging and marketing plans. And if the supply of corn, I think we need to talk about what the crop size is going to be next year. It's imperative here and around the world that we grow some big and good crops to make up for the need we have here.
Well, of course, the two ingredients that make ethanol a tremendous opportunity, of course, is cheap corn and high-priced fuel, and, of course, a lot of capital to build new ethanol plants. And, of course, the capital is a problem, and also the cheap corn is a problem. The high-priced energy is there. I think the one thing that Wayne touched on that I think that was interesting is that we're front-loaded in corn, and I think that's true. And I think if we do get timely rains in South America, that good big corn crop, maybe the government's talking about a 22 million metric ton crop in Argentina. The private sources say if we get rain, it could be 24.5 million metric tons. Also, Australia is being blessed with tremendous rains. I think we are starting to see some indication that feed grains will become more available at a sooner rate. But nevertheless, it's probably going to be the July timeframe when the wheat crop starts to come on before we start to put a real top into the corn market.
In Argentina, by the way, about 90% planted with their corn crop as of this week. Wayne, I think what most farmers will be asking themselves this week, along with do I want to sell new crop and do I want to empty some bins out, is can this be sustained through the month of February?
Well, there's a lot of people that are waiting through that time period to make that decision. Todd, I believe Daryl Good made that comment at some of his meetings that he was talking about, that you should hold through that time period and see what the crop insurance price is going to be, as to know that possibly having that crop insurance is sort of a backdrop on knowing what that price will be. We know the crop insurance is going to go up drastically this year because we're insuring so many more dollars per acre, and it's going to be very expensive, but so are all the inputs and so are the returns this year that we don't want to miss out on. But I'll tell you, Todd, I think that the battle for acres will continue through about the February timeframe, and that's sort of why we feel that maybe we don't want to be aggressive sellers in here and sit back for a little while.
Everybody else agree with that?
You know, my hunch is that from what my co-panel members mentioned to me about the fertilizer price and people not booking and the soybean demand, I think that we are overrating the corn. I think there's going to be more of a shift in acres than what people anticipated. So I think that we're starting to see a trend towards more beans and less corn at this time, more so than I ever dreamed in the central Illinois, where I did see a lot of fertilizer go on. I thought some super yields, and to me, the dollars and cents still point towards planting corn in central Illinois. So I'm getting some mixed signals, but they're signals that I think are extremely important and, you know, relevant to the marketplace.
More corn for you this year on your farm?
No, I never really jumped that much last year, so I think I'll probably stay in the same type of rotation I've been in, but I think there's a big difference. We were talking before, again, the availability of nitrogen and dry fertilizer in Illinois, and Wayne and I think would agree, is in Indiana it was a different situation. We couldn't get it bought, and it was much higher from the get-go, and it's still much higher now. So it's kind of a location. I work with some guys in Wisconsin who they didn't, in their system, didn't usually put on dry fertilizer, order it in wintertime, and their dealers can't even get it. So will they even get any by springtime? So I think we're a little bit different here in Illinois.
Did you get the feeling that, Chuck, that the yield drag on corn was a little more prevalent than you thought in some areas of Indiana on corn or not necessarily?
It wasn't my experience. I mean, we had a little bit of corn on corn, and it was less bushels than our corn on soybeans. And, you know, a lot of the magazines and articles we hear say that it can be done and you won't lose anything. But my experience was it was less bushels.
Wayne, did you get any vibes on this indication that there will be some extra beans because of these other outside influences like fertilizer?
Well, I think that basically everybody that did buy their fertilizer early is sticking with their original plans on corn. I have some of my customers that were not as aggressive with their fertilizer purchases or didn't have the time or the money at the time to do it, and they're talking about switching over probably 50, 100, 200, 300 acres. And I have one large producer that had 30 acres of beans last year and 4,000 acres of corn, and he's switching, doing the same except beans this year.
I think one thing is being left out. Most producers borrow money to put out a crop, and it's significantly more money that you have to borrow to put out that corn crop when the returns are relatively close. So to me, you know, the risk from your lender might influence some of these decisions too when you look at how much money you have to borrow to put out a corn crop.
Is credit easier or harder to get this year than it was last year?
Todd, just to
my farmers aren't even going to go to the bank because they had such a good crop and made so much money. But I wanted to share this one, that at least the boys in the south half of the state that didn't buy their inputs haven't sold much new crop corn or new crop beans because they use that as kind of a crutch. Maybe that's a good crutch. And, you know, when prices are higher, the fertilizer price, in my opinion, wasn't that much of a factor. But I'm a good listener, and I appreciate what they're saying in these states around central Illinois, and that's a big part of the Corn Belt as well.
Yeah. Todd, one thing here, I was talking to a banker Friday morning, and he's a little bit disappointed that most of these farmers are buying new machinery, buying new pickup trucks, and not paying off some farm ground they bought in the past, not paying down their notes as fast as they'd like them to. So they are seeing a lot of machinery being bought, but they aren't seeing quite as much pay down on some of these notes as they'd like to see.
Well, they probably have a low interest rate over 30 years, and they don't want to pay that off.
Well, probably so.
Which is my guess, but we'll see how that goes. So let me go back. We know, Paul, that you think that there's going to be more bean acres. and quite a few more bean acres. But I'm not convinced that the other two are in that boat exactly, but they might be there along with you, so I want to make sure that that's right. Chuck, do you think there will be a – and I guess maybe we ought to define what we think a lot is.
Yeah,
what
right.
do you think a lot is, Paul,
yeah,
first?
Well,
is that just to switch back to what we did the year before?
Let's go back to the Sparks numbers, and
okay.
I think they had basically 70 million acres for beans. On their reports, what do you think of that?
Well, if we look at it again, if that corn acres that went up, it'd have to come back to be corn on corn. Also, we got to know how much wheat acres are planted because that typically goes on the bean stubble. So I'm leaning that most of those acres will go back away that were corn, and that's 10 million, whatever, 10, 12 million.
So how about, do you think 70 million acres
of beans? So you think we'll lose
beans?
12 million acres of corn this year then?
Yeah, I think so. And again, the guys bought, like Wayne said, they bought a lot of their inputs, but there's a lot of guys that didn't. Those are the acres right there, Wayne, that are going to be the ones that I think are going to come back, and if costs stay high.
But let me stay with you. So lose 12 million acres, but that doesn't necessarily mean we pick them up in soybeans. They could be wheat. We could get double crop soybeans off of them. What are your thoughts, and where are they? I mean, those acres, and how do you divvy them up?
That's a dilemma, and I think, again, there's so many factors when you bring back in there. I don't have a real good answer on that other than I think that acreage report in the spring can have huge price swings, and that's why we need to be flexible as producers. We haven't talked about that much of what to do with these prices, but we can see some major movements based on what we really end up doing. But I got to lean more towards a lot less corn acres. I'm not sure on the mixture, but other than more beans.
We'll come back to you in just a second on the flexibility issue. But, Wayne, what are your thoughts on corn versus bean versus wheat acres and the discussion we're having?
Well, we know that there was a lot more wheat put out than usual this year. The prices were just too good not to take advantage of it. Cotton paid a big price in that. Rice paid a big price in that. We saw a lot of good wheat as we go through the Mid-South. In our area, south of our area more so, in our area there isn't hardly any wheat grown, but if you go south of 70, we'll see quite a bit of wheat seeded. And as we do go through the state and looking at things in Indiana, there is more soft red wheat. We are not going to have a shortage of soft red wheat by any means. It's going to be in the hard wheat and the other. But I'm not quite as optimistic of bean acres as Chuck is, but I am optimistic that we're going to see a lot of double crop acres of beans and all that. Most of that wheat ground, where it's possible at all, they're going to try their best to put out beans, double crop beans, because it doesn't take many bushel to pay for double cropping when they're over $10.
Paul, I'll give you the final word on this, but I would like some acreage numbers from you. What do you think?
Well, Informa came out with 64.1 million acres of wheat, and it wouldn't surprise me from Memphis South after Thanksgiving that acreage isn't going to go up another million to 2 million acres. And, of course, the Informa group came in with 87.4 million acres of corn. My general impression is that's probably a million acres too high, and we're going to see the bean acres, their number was 70 million acres, and I think it's 71.5 to 72 million based on conversations here and what we're picking up in the seed industry.
So you think we're going to lose what, 9
We'll lose a couple, just about a million acres to 1.5 million acres of corn. But the reason why the bean acreage is still going to be a surprise is the double crop beans from the extra 2 million acres of wheat that's being planted. So there'll be something like 6.7 million acres of double crop beans in the United States, which is a wow.
If they can get the seed, I mean, that's an issue too. I mean, it sounds like the bean seed is tight because of some quality issues on the seed coat. So I don't know. It's again, going to be a real tight shoe to fit into on all this planted acres.
All right, Chuck, you wanted to talk about being flexible and being, I suppose, protecting yourself is what you mean by flexibility. But tell me what your thoughts are.
It's easy to sit here, and these are great prices, and I guess I'd be in the camp. I think the market will continue to march higher. However, you know, that's not really a plan. That's just sitting here watching things. And I think that's kind of what we're here for. So I prefer to, guys, you know, transfer your risk. If you're sitting in the bin, you're basically trading the futures market other than the basis, and that's a pretty wild gain. If you watched last Friday, we lost an electronic trade 45 cents in about a minute. I think, again, it bodes well for guys to transfer some risk if they want to sell the cash and buy call or put options, as Wayne said. But that was one of the best spent money, Wayne, that anybody probably did all year in farming for what the return was on the rally we've had.
And so you don't want to be a speck, so to speak, with your bin full. You want to go ahead. How do you want to have some around? Do you want to save 30 or 40%? You want to how much would you like to have in the bin just because? And then I suppose you're going to take the rest of it and cover it with some options of some sort.
He wants enough for seed anyway.
Yeah. Well, for soy, not if it's Roundup Ready soybeans.
I understand if you pay the tech fees, it's okay.
That's right.
I think if we rally through the next couple months, Todd, I'd be inclined to let it all go and go on to the paper position because, again, those bushels need to go as producers. If you want to gamble at these levels, I'd prefer to be in known cost and capture these great prices and be done and go on and see
on both
what
corn
happens.
And soybeans.
Yeah, I think so. Again, it's not a money losing proposition if we rally into winter here in the next month or two and let the cash go. You can sell it for next deferred delivery if you want to, but if we get this strong rally, we're looking at it in the wintertime, I think you let it go and be on paper.
Differences of opinions, differences of ways to go about covering it?
You know, I'm not criticizing anything our panel said because, they're very close to being right. And the point I want to make is I really am surprised that we're not seeing more farmers come in and buy bulk haul spreads or replace some ownership with some kind of options if they have sold as much as they have. They are walking around with a lot of money in their pockets based on this, the bushels and the crop yield. But there doesn't seem to be a lot of interest in replacing cash ownership from what I can tell.
And would you suggest that they do
well,
that?
Well, I mean, if you really
do feel...
Is that
what you want them to do or do
well,
you not want them
I
to
am
make
surprised we don't see more of it.
Well, that's not the question.
To answer your question more directly, I think it's bullish as some of these people are. I'm surprised we aren't seeing it.
Todd, one of the things that I think that some of the people that have grain in the bins should look at is some short-term cereal options or puts that might seem like a long ways out of the money but have offered a little protection. You can buy the February options that take you through this next report next Friday that don't cost that much and can give you a lot of peace of mind that we don't have that two-day limit down or something like that if it does happen. They're not very expensive, and that can be something that people can do. You know, if we look out to December, like a 480 put is 43 cents. And that's something that can be looked at for some of these guys. And then somewhere down the road, if we see the crop in the ground looking good, the 560 calls are 23. The $5.60 calls are 23.75. You know, you can put a fence on some of these prices, and I think that a lot of guys that are maybe a little close to the belt as far as their financing go, that wouldn't be a bad idea to put a fence on this.
Wheat numbers finished in Chicago like this. The March contract at 9.45, high low at 77.25. Settlement price up 46.5 from last week at 9.31.5. July at 8.17.25, up 38.25 from last week. Lean hog futures at 58.05 for the high, the low at 57. Settlement price down 90 at 56.40 in the Febs. And the January feeder cattle at $100.32.5 were down $4 for the week. A final word from our panelist, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services.
Well, I wish everybody a happy new year, but I am surprised the USDA doesn't seem to have any concern at all on these prices at this time.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
We'd be surprised if something doesn't happen within the next 12 months that the government releases some CRP acres if these prices continue to stay at this level.
And Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities.
If you want to hold it in a bin for those higher prices, I would at least have an objective that you're going for, and when it gets there, make a move when it gets to your price objective.
I'm Todd Gleason. That's Commodity Week.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.